Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're diving deep into something that might sound a bit dry, maybe bureaucratic, but it's actually incredibly powerful.
It really is.
It affects a huge slice of the New Zealand economy. We're talking about the New Zealand government procurement rules and how they're changing. Our mission today really is to cut through the jargon, zero in on the big shifts from the 2019 rules to what's being proposed for 2025. And especially, how these changes could open up some really exciting new doors for smaller Kiwi businesses.
And what's fascinating here, I think, is just the sheer scale we're talking about. Government spending in New Zealand, it's tens of billions of dollars every year. So how that money gets spent isn't just about buying paperclips or building roads. It's a powerful lever, isn't it, for national well-being, for economic growth. It really shapes industries, shapes communities.
Absolutely. So before we jump into the really juicy stuff in the 2025 proposals, maybe we should quickly set the scene. The groundwork laid back in 2019.
Good idea. Yeah, the fourth edition rules.
Because historically, procurement was often just about the lowest price, right? Get the cheapest quote.
Pretty much. But 2019 started to pivot away from that thinking. It introduced this new concept, or at least formalized it, broader outcomes.
Or her outcomes.
Precisely. So under those 2019 rules, agencies were, well, explicitly told they had to consider more than just the immediate price or the direct benefit of the purchase.
So, not just how good the chairs are, but who made them.
Exactly. Think about it like that. Buying furniture, you look at the price, sure, but also, is it made sustainably? Did making it support local jobs? Are the labor practices fair? It kind of broadened the whole scope to include social, economic, cultural, and environmental impacts. Really vital stuff.
And crucially for the smaller businesses we mentioned, this wasn't just a vague idea, was it? It actually started paving the way.
It definitely did. I mean, the 2019 rules explicitly mentioned supporting New Zealand businesses right there in the foreword. And the principles. They laid out a clear directive to seek opportunities to include New Zealand businesses. And they specifically called out SMEs, Māori, Pasifika, and regional businesses. That was really the first sort of formal nudge towards making sure local firms got a look in.
So how did they actually encourage agencies to do that in practice?
Well, the guidance suggested things like restructuring big contracts, breaking them down into smaller chunks where it made sense. The idea was to help smaller Kiwi businesses compete because, let's face it, many just don't have the scale to handle a massive nationwide contract.
Makes sense, like an IT project. Maybe do it region by region.
Exactly. Allow smaller tech firms in, say, Otago or the Bay of Plenty to bid on their local piece rather than one giant company taking the whole lot. And the rules also recommended allowing enough time, I think it was at least 27 business days, for things like joint bids and subcontracting, giving SMEs the breathing room they needed to team up.
So that was the foundation then, a shift in mindset.
Yeah, if you connect the dots, the 2019 rules really began to formalize this idea that procurement could do more than just buy stuff. It could drive, broader public value, moving beyond the transaction itself.
Okay, so if 2019 laid that groundwork, what's the big leap forward with these 2025 proposals? What's the headline change?
Here's where it gets, I think, really transformative. The proposed 2025 rules, the fifth edition, they take those intentions from 2019 and make them much more concrete, much more accountable. So while 2019 encouraged considering broader outcomes, 2025 strengthens accountability, boosts transparency, and crucially, it explicitly aims to drive economic growth for New Zealand businesses. That's the key difference.
So the forward for 2025 actually highlights economic benefit to New Zealand as a core focus.
Exactly, a core mandatory focus.
Mandatory. Okay, that sounds like a much stronger directive, not just a nice to have anymore.
Not at all. And the absolute centerpiece of this, especially thinking about smaller businesses, is the significant new requirement, Rule 8. It's actually titled Economic Benefit to New Zealand.
Rule 8.
Got it. And it applies to contracts above certain thresholds. It's $100,000 for goods and services, refurbishment works, and $9 million for construction. Big contracts. And what it means is agencies must now require suppliers in their tender proposals to demonstrate how they will deliver economic benefits to New Zealand.
So you have to spell it out now. Can't just imply
You've
it.
got to spell it out, no longer just considering it.
Wow, that is a huge shift. So, what kind of benefits are we talking about? Can you give some examples?
Sure. And The rules actually list specific examples, which is helpful. Agencies will be looking for things like creating jobs, skills development, training for the local workforce,
okay.
economic growth for local communities. And here's the big one for our listeners. Increased opportunities for New Zealand businesses.
Uh-huh.
And that explicitly includes Māori, Pasifika, regional businesses, and social enterprises. So it's very targeted. Other things include boosting innovation, increasing exports, making supply chains more diverse and resilient. It gives those smaller local businesses clear ways to show their value. Very direct, very tangible.
And there's a specific weighting for this in the evaluation, how the bids are scored. That sounds like the real game changer.
It absolutely is. This is where the rubber really hits the road, I think.
Yeah.
The 2025 rules mandate a minimum weighting of 10% for evaluation purposes for economic benefits.
10% minimum.
Minimum. And agencies can actually apply a higher weighting if they think it's appropriate for that particular contract. So what this means is a supplier's concrete promise to deliver tangible economic benefits here in New Zealand directly impacts their score. It becomes a critical factor in actually winning the work, not just some kind of bonus point.
Right.
And these commitments, they have to be written into the contract itself. And then agencies have to monitor them, make sure they actually happen. There's follow-through built in.
So let's really dig into that. How does that mandatory weighting truly open doors for, say, a small software company in Christchurch or a regional construction firm? It feels like it puts them on a much more even footing.
It really does level the playing field. I mean, imagine two bids for a government service contract. Bid A is slightly cheaper, comes from a big multinational maybe.
Yep.
Bid B is from a smaller Kiwi company, maybe slightly more expensive on paper. But their proposal clearly shows how they'll create 5 new local jobs, invest in training their team, source supplies from other regional NZ businesses, maybe support a local community project.
Yeah.
With that mandatory 10% weighting for economic benefits, suddenly Big B has this concrete, measurable advantage. It can actually outweigh that small price difference.
Right. So local impact gets properly valued, tangibly.
Exactly. Valued alongside cost and quality. It directly incentivizes agencies to choose local, which helps build a more resilient, you know, domestically focused economy.
That makes a lot of sense. And beyond that direct weighting, the 2025 rules have other crucial updates that help smaller Kiwi businesses too, right?
Definitely.
One that immediately jumps out is prompt payment times, cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything for small businesses, isn't it? Late payments can be crippling.
Oh, absolutely. This is a huge relief for so many smaller operators, and the new requirements are very specific, very clear.
How specific?
Well, from January 1st, 2026, agencies must pay 90% of domestic invoices. Those are the electronic ones that speed everything up within 5 business days.
5 days, that's fast.
It is. And for other domestic trade invoices, it's 10 business days, and that kicks in even sooner, January 1st, 2025. So it significantly speeds up the whole payment cycle, directly helps with working capital.
Okay, but what about subcontractors?
Mm-hmm.
Often the smaller guys are further down the chain. Does the money flow through quickly?
Ah, that's a key point, and the rules tackle it head on. Agencies must require their main contractors, the prime contractors, to pay their subcontractors on terms that are no less favorable.
Ah, brilliant.
So if the prime gets paid in 10 days, they can't then sit on the subcontractor's payment for 60 days. It ensures that prompt payment commitment actually flows down the whole supply chain.
That's huge for those smaller suppliers.
It really is. I remember talking to a small joinery firm once. Nightmare story. Prime contractor held payment for 90 days, almost bankrupted them. This rule aims to stop that kind of thing. Plus, there's more transparency. Quarterly reporting on payment times, so agencies will be held accountable for meeting those targets.
So better payment, better waiting.
Yeah.
What about just finding out about opportunities and understanding how to bid? Is it getting easier to navigate the system? Less of a black box.
That seems to be exactly the intent, improving visibility and access. So the 2025 rules now require agencies to make their procurement policies publicly available.
Okay, so you can see how they operate internally.
Yeah, it makes it easier for suppliers to understand an agency's processes, their priorities, rather than just guessing or trying to navigate some complex internal maze. That transparency helps level the playing field again. Easier for smaller firms to know what's needed.
And what about planning ahead, seeing what's coming down the pipeline?
Yes, definitely better information there too. They're introducing something called Future Procurement Opportunities, FPOs. These replace the old annual procurement plans.
FPOs, okay.
And they're designed to give suppliers even better advance notice of upcoming contracts, more detail, hopefully more regularity.
Which helps smaller businesses plan, maybe team up.
Exactly. Gives them time to prepare, collaborate on bids much earlier, increases their chances significantly. And just on a practical note, the push for invoicing capability in agencies and making large suppliers use it, that should streamline things for everyone too. Less paperwork, faster admin.
Okay. And one final point, maybe. There was something in the 2019 rules about not deliberately splitting contracts just to avoid the rules. Is that still there? Strengthened.
Correct. That accountability is definitely reinforced. Rule 3.3, I think. Agencies are explicitly prohibited from intentionally structuring or, you know, dividing up procurements just to get under the thresholds and avoid applying the rules.
Right.
Now, they can still break large contracts into smaller lots to help SMEs compete. That's encouraged, as we said earlier.
Yes.
But they can't do it sneakily just to sidestep the guidelines. It sort of implicitly encourages them to consider smaller lots fairly transparently. It backs up the whole spirit of the rules, which is about fostering genuine opportunity for everyone.
Okay, so as we wrap up here, what's the main takeaway for you hearing all this? For me, it really feels like the whole process is becoming much more, I don't know, intentional.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
It seems clear the government is actively trying to make sure its huge spending power directly fuels local growth, supports a more diverse supplier base here in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
That shift from just considering things to having a mandatory waiting for economic benefit, plus the faster payments, the better visibility, it just feels like a much more measurable, deliberate path for Kiwi businesses, especially the smaller ones, to get involved.
And I guess it raises an important question for you listening. How will this really powerful new emphasis on local economic benefit, combined with faster cash flow and more transparency, how will that actually ripple through local communities?
Yeah.
Could it inspire a new wave of innovation among New Zealand's small businesses? It's not just about winning one contract, is it? It's potentially about the broader transformative impact. Local economies, jobs, maybe fostering a more dynamic business environment right across the country.
A lot to think about.
Definitely. We'd encourage you to maybe explore how these changes could impact your own business, your community.
Yeah.
Are there new opportunities opening up on the horizon because of this? Worth investigating.